Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's September the 21st, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market today with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, an investment firm has decided to put $5 million into a biodiesel processing plant to be located in Danville, Illinois. We'll hear details a bit later. And also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. And Dave Dickey will update us on all the Farm Bill debate happenings in Washington, D.C. this week. Oh, and don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, as always, a meteorologist will join us. And today, Peter Levitt, to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, WILLAG.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to WILLAG.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat at $4.21.5, up 13.75. The March futures at $4.39.25 for the soft red, 13.75 higher as well. December corn futures up 8.25 cents, $2.57.25. The March contract at $2.70, up 7.75. And May corn at $2.77, 7.75 higher. December futures at $2.95, up 5.5 cents. November beans, $5.50 up. 5.58 at 8.75 higher. January futures at 5.71.5 up 9.25, and the March contract at 5.82.25 up 8.75 for the day. November beans for next year at 6.15.75 up 7 cents. Soybean meal October contract 168.30. They're up 2.50 on the day. Oil at 24.30, 14 higher. Feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange, 116.42.5. And the SEPs, they were 40 cents higher. October live cattle at $89.75, 100 weight up 70 cents. And December futures were up 50 at $89.35. Lean hogs October contract, $63.85, down 32.5 cents on the day. Crude oil futures now trading at $61.60 a barrel, up 86 cents. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,515, up just about 98 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, as he does every Thursday afternoon, is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hey, Todd.
Busy day in Chicago. Tell me about the corn pit, please.
Well, a combination of things. I think everything kind of blending in here together. I mean, the wheat market is the stout one here. Everybody's worried about a shrinking Australian wheat crop, a shrinking Argentina wheat crop, so shrinking world wheat inventories. So, you know, that market is concerned about overall wheat supplies, and, you know, it's kind of given us an incentive here to make sure these fall wheat seedings grow like some people expect them to grow. So the wheat market kind of leads the pack. That follows over into the corn market, helps the corn market up. Corn had a good export sales number here. Our marketing year sales are ahead of last year. We got a lot of open sales orders, so the exporters need to be aggressive in here to get some cash inventory to meet those sales. Generally, the pipeline is empty. Not much harvest has taken place. However, it is beginning to spread out a little bit here. What's been harvested, farmers have been generally tight holders of that inventory.
Tell me why it is that if they need something to fill the pipeline, they would do it in the December contract as opposed to bidding cash prices.
Well, look at the cash market. Probably after today's advances, we're probably within a dime or so of the summer high. I mean, if you look back, our summer high on lead futures was up there around that 263, 265 area. You've got these futures now about 257. So on a weekly chart, we're climbing right up against the summer highs. The cash chart basis levels have firmed. In some areas are real strong when you get around processors, but that's kind of a one day good, one day bad, back and forth, because it's kind of a local condition. But basis levels have tightened in, or much tighter than anyone had probably expected here a month or two ago. So you've got, some pretty strong markets out there, and nobody's much willing to sell at this point.
Corn market finished strong in the afternoon, up near the highs. Will we see follow through this evening and tomorrow?
You could see. I've got beans going higher again tomorrow, and I think that might help corn out a little bit, might help wheat out a little bit. But one would think any early strength tomorrow morning, you would begin to maybe see some long profit taking going into the weekend. So, that's one thing that you have to contend with after a pretty good up week and everything across the board, is that the longs are probably going to want to take some profits. So you're going to probably see some softness, in the complex sometime during tomorrow, if not right away.
Can you get excited about this up move in the corn market, given that we have an awful lot of harvest left to do?
Well, I think we're in a sideways to higher climb across the board. Wheat and corn began their sideways to higher climb coming out of a mid-August low. Since then, it's done nothing but gain momentum to the upside. Beans struggled here an extra 2 to 3 weeks. Beans really didn't get its act together and make a good turn until last week. So I think beans now have made their turn. So they're in the sideways to higher mode. And so I think that's what we're into. I think we're into a fall rally. I think all of the bullishness of what everybody's talking about next spring, next summer, is all going to be worked into the market this fall. And that's going to provide some underlying strength to this market as we go through harvest. Now, if yields come out well above what everybody's thinking, then we're going to have some, into harvest selling pressure that could put this market on its heels maybe sometime in November, December. But I think initially here, at least through the first half of harvest, maybe even through the first two-thirds of harvest, this market could be hold fairly stout, sideways to higher. There's been a lot of bins build over the past year. The elevators are ready for it. And, I think this here is a result of Hurricane Katrina. Believe it or not, I think Hurricane Katrina basically teed up this fall rally a year ago because everybody was fearful. And then all of these weather gurus has been talking about the most active hurricane season yet, and that seemed to have kind of fizzled out here this summer so far, or this season. And that's one of the reasons why you got $60 oil, because you had a lot of hurricane premium built into the energy complex. I think you had an awful lot of end users wanting to buy late summer, early fall weakness at 50-cent basis levels or 75-cent basis levels. They wanted to fill their bin with all this cheap corn and cheap beans based upon the ending stocks levels that USDA was projecting. That never materialized, so now they're kind of caught. The pipeline's empty, and users got to come to the table, and they're having to chase this thing higher. It also indicates this type of strength this time of year kind of indicates that probably USDA's ending stocks numbers that they are using are maybe way too high. They may last year's crop may be way overstated because with those kind of inventory levels, you shouldn't really necessarily be seeing this kind of strength at this time.
What do you think? You said sideways to higher. What's the cap on the upside then for the fall?
Well, I think you can go back to your summer highs pretty easy on corn. I don't think that's out of the question, which would be, you know, D's corn back into the 280s here sometime here during October, November. I would not rule that out. We'll have to kind of take day by day and see how that plays out. But I think that's going to be the target of technicians with December corn now. Having climbed this way back above this 250 area, I think that kind of tees up a climb up toward the highs. On the lead futures basis, this 263, 264, you start clearing that. I think then that, you know, tees you up to go on up into the 280s. So I think that's kind of what December corn is pointing at for its first major upside target that I could probably point at for this fall.
If it does that, are you a willing seller at that point?
I'm in that mode to be watchful for a fall high. We'll have to kind of take each week by itself and kind of see what the fundamentals are. But I would be inclined to think if we have a fall high at those kind of levels, that one may want to do that between this fall and the January crop report, because we could be setting ourselves up for a December, January high or a fall high, late fall, early winter high, and then that everybody's waiting on for this spring rally. It never materializes, and it just, we go sideways to lower all the way down into a summer low, and then we'll kind of see what kind of weather we have and what kind of crop size we have.
Dan, we appreciate you being with us.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
Just one quick local agricultural news story, and then a bit later in the program, Dave Dickey will be along with a complete look at what's been happening in Washington, D.C. this week in terms of the 2007 Farm Bill debate. Well, Earth Biofuels has invested $5 million for an equity interest in a newly formed company named Biodiesel Investment Group. This is a Memphis-based investment group, and it's teaming up with Bunge North America to build Illinois' largest biodiesel production plant in Danville. That plant will be located next to Bunge soy crushing and corn milling plants. The new plant is expected to have a production capacity of 45 million gallons of biodiesel per year and to be in production in the first quarter of 2008. Well, up next, in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says there is an art to compromise.
Anyone who has worked on policy matters in Washington, D.C. or at a state capitol knows that while the political system often seems to be broken beyond repair, compromise most often rules the day, and legislators of different persuasions somehow come together and get things done. Right now, the U.S. Congress seems unable or unwilling to make the necessary compromises to improve agriculture's access to labor and ensure the fruit and vegetable sector's competitiveness in the United States. Unless they figure out how to pass immigration reform legislation that improves agriculture's access to affordable, temporary workers, the U.S. could lose up to $9 billion of its fruit and vegetable production to competition from other countries. It's often referred to as strange bedfellows, and it's the reason we have some of the most important laws on the books today. The Social Security Act of the 1930s, the Voting Rights Act of 1960s, the welfare reform of the 1990s, and the Farm Bill are all products of congressional compromise. The House and Senate have passed very different versions of immigration reform bills, and members should be sitting down to compromise and work out a final bill that fixes, at least to some extent, the different immigration problems that the bill was supposed to resolve. Instead, some members of Congress have dug in their heels. They have not held one meeting to begin the bargaining. They haven't even formed a conference committee to work on the compromise. There is still a chance that Congress can reach across the ideological divide and deliver a bill that controls our country's broken borders, but also preserves U.S. agriculture's competitiveness and creates legal opportunities for immigrants who want to work hard and build a better life in America, the same as many of our ancestors have done. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850. Washington, D.C. has been busy this week. Congress heard plenty from agricultural industry leaders yesterday, and there was general consensus that the 2002 Farm Bill is working just fine, thank you very much. Well enough, in fact, that many want it extended to give more time for world trade policy to be negotiated. AM 580 Director of Agricultural Programming Dave Dickey reports.
Organizations favoring extension included the American Farm Bureau Federation, the National Farmers Union, the American Sugar Alliance, and state corn grower organizations in Texas, Minnesota, and Maryland. ASA Director of Economics and Policy Analysis Jack Roney says the 2002 Farm Bill, by and large, has worked well.
Our feeling is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's working well for American taxpayers because U.S. sugar policy runs at no cost to taxpayers. There's no payments to our producers whatsoever. It's been working well for consumers. Consumers have enjoyed an incredibly stable and low price for sugar for many, many years.
But some industry leaders say the 2002 Farm Bill does need tweaking, and that could potentially add to cost. Gerald Tumbleson is president of the National Corn Growers Association. Tumbleson introduced a revenue-based safety net proposal.
What we've gone and done is put a crop revenue protection package together where it's kind of like you're protected on a yield and a price and input costs, which we don't have on the other farm bill, so that farmers have some protection on the input costs too under that. And then it also protects against disaster more than the one we have today.
And Tumbleson introduced two other potential programs, base revenue protection and revenue countercyclical payments. Tumbleson says the programs are WTO compliant and work together to assist producers when market revenue dips below target levels.
Some people think this is just a farmer program, but it is not a farmer program. It allows us to produce for the United States of America, and that's what we want to do. We want to have our farmers allowed to produce crops and energy and protein and whatever we need in the United States, and we want to have them there year after year after year producing this. And this safety net allows our farmers to remain out there and produce that.
National Farmers Union President Tom Bias says NFU supports a permanent disaster aid program as proposed by House Ag Committee Ranking Democrat Colin Peterson. But Bias also said a new farm bill in the current federal budget environment would be, in his words, a step backwards. Meanwhile, American Soybean Association First Vice President John Hoffman says there needs to be adjustment of loan rates from the 2002 Farm Bill.
When you look at the loan rate versus the Olympic average for the different crops within the Farm Bill, there's a huge range of differences, and we need to not have planting intentions distorted. So there needs to be some adjustments so that soybeans are treated more equitably.
Representatives of the National Cotton Council called for a replacement of the Step 2 program, deemed illegal by the World Trade Organization. But NCC leaders say they have not figured out a replacement that would be WTO compliant. National Cattlemen's Beef Association President Mike John asked lawmakers to continue to work to remove trade barriers and to enforce laws already on the books.
We support the critical role of government in ensuring a competitive market through strong oversight. This includes the role of taking the necessary enforcement actions when situations involve illegal activities such as collusion, antitrust, and price fixing. However, government intervention must not inhibit the producer's ability to take advantage of new marketing opportunities and strategies geared toward capturing more value for our beef. A ban on packer ownership or forward contracting has been a part of farm bill debates for years. We are strongly opposed to those efforts because we feel that Congress is trying to tell cattle producers how and when to market their cattle. This strikes at the very basis of our business, which is utilizing the market to improve our returns and make a living.
Still, there were some grumblings that the 2002 Farm Bill was not equitable across all crops. National Barley Growers Association President Richard Groven says barley has lost acreage because other crops get higher benefits. And members of the National Wheat Growers say marketing loan programs and countercyclical payments have not helped because prices are set too low. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte warned industry leaders that it remains to be seen whether a new farm bill would pay out more or fewer dollars, while at the same time acknowledging that there would be, in his words, a larger number of players competing for the same pie. This is Dave Dickey, AM 580 Agriculture.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon here on WILL AM 580. We're joined now to take a look at the cash grain market by Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And tell me about harvest in your area. Anything happening yet?
Yeah, it's this is probably going to be the biggest day of harvest so far here. But I was looking at the volumes earlier, and it's going to be similar to like the in like 10, 12 days ago, you know, last year. So it's still, we're behind 10 days, 2 weeks. And, you know, if you take, now we're using 32 million bushel a day. I think I saw some place the other day on our demand side on corn. That's 320 million bushel that's been used that, you know, we have taken out of carryout basically. So I think that kind of explains a little bit on what's been going on here, and the basis getting better and continuing to get better, and the futures moving up. And if you look at the radar, it's not going to get any better, it doesn't look like.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it is. Can you see the basis continuing to narrow over the next week?
Yeah, I think so, until we see some corn hitting us pretty hard. And, you know, it just depends on whether we maybe start to see some beans come in, you know, before we really get going on the corn. Now, that almost seems to me like that could be the case as we move forward here a little bit.
Yeah, because beans won't stand in the field nearly as long as the corn, that's for sure. They'll start to shatter as they dry down. What are you hearing about your marketplace along the river? Has it been holding steady, too?
Yeah, really, the river hasn't come in quite as strong this past week as what some of the processor bids have, but really, on the corn side, everything is improved. The processor market's improved a lot. And on the bean side, we've seen kind of mixed. We've seen the river actually fall off a little bit on the beans.
And what are your bids for the day there?
Cash corn is 232, January 246. Beans at 526, 541 for Jan.
Any final word before I let you go?
No, I don't think so. Just everybody have a safe harvest out there.
Thank you indeed. Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons to take a look at the cash grain market. In just about 2 minutes, we'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Main Street Bank and Trust and Busey Bank have announced a merger and will soon operate under the Busey name. Busey President and CEO David Mills says that pending regulatory and shareholder approval, customers of both banks will be able to use each other's ATMs without a surcharge and later this year be able to do business at each other's respective branches. Between them, Busey and Main Street have 45 banking centers and more than 120 ATMs in central Illinois. Mills says it's inevitable that some branches will close due to the merger. A newly formed commission charged with redeveloping the former Chanute Air Force Base took a bus tour of the Chanute site in Rantoul today. State legislation allowed the creation of the 11-member commission. Commissioner and U of I economist Jim Hines says efforts to convert the base that closed 13 years ago have been successful so far. But there are still acres of unused property and aging buildings at the Chanute site awaiting redevelopment. The Illinois Supreme Court has upheld the death sentence for a Southern Illinois man named Cecil Sutherland, who killed a 10-year-old girl in 1987. The court overturned Sutherland's first condemnation in 2000. But today it rejected the 51-year-old man's claims of error at his second trial in 2004. Chicago-based Boeing has won a $67 million contract to install a high-tech virtual fence along the Mexican border in Arizona. The Homeland Security contract announced today calls for cameras, sensors, and even unmanned planes. A man suspected of heading a multi-county video gambling ring is being held on a $2 million cash bond. Authorities found more than $1 million stashed in the wall of John Neal's Yorktown, Indiana home and suspect he has millions more still hidden. The family of one of the premature infants who died from an overdose of a blood thinner at an Indianapolis hospital says the medication's package should be changed. The lawyer for the family of Thursday, Dawn Jeffers, says he's contacting the pharmaceutical company about the change. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to The Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. We're joined on a Thursday to take a look at the agricultural weather by meteorologist Peter Levitt. Hi, Pete.
Hi, good afternoon, Todd.
It's been a beautiful couple of days here. The temps haven't been too terribly hot. I think, 66 degrees outside at this point. Here, 69 degrees here on the Friends Plaza, by the way. And skies are still a bit sunny, but starting to get a little overcast. And I think we have some rain coming in at some point in the future. Tell me about it.
Oh, yes, we do, unfortunately. We had a good weekend last week, and now we're going to have the opposite coin. We've got some pretty solid showers moving through eastern Nebraska and into western Iowa, southwestern Minnesota, at this time associated with a storm system over the central plains. And this whole area of rain and unpleasant weather is going to overspread most of the central Corn Belt, and that, of course, is Illinois and Indiana. Late tonight, but mostly tomorrow night, Saturday, and into Sunday, so it looks like a pretty grim weekend with the heaviest rains probably in the western central portions of the Corn Belt tomorrow, and then in the central belt on Saturday, and the eastern Corn Belt on Sunday with clearing. And, of course, when you come back to work on Monday morning, the skies will be beautiful again. The temperature's a little cooler.
But we'll be wet at that point still. How much rainfall do you think?
It looks to me as though we're looking at 1.5 to maybe 2.5 inches, which is a pretty healthy amount of rain, especially for this time of year.
Yes.
The heaviest amounts in the Missouri Valley out west early on, and then in the Ohio Valley, which is east of the region, late in the period. But across the middle of the belt, I think we're looking at 1.5 to maybe 2.5 inches all told. A really wet period and something that's not going to be pleasant for harvest activity.
Yes, indeed. And then the bad news I heard was that potentially it continues after the dryness comes early in the week next week. Is that right?
That's right. We get the next episode shows up, and guess when? On the weekend. It's typical of weather patterns. They get into 7-day cycles. You start with a bad weekend, and you don't have a very pleasant outlook in the future.
and what does that rainfall look like for the following weekend then?
Oh, it's a little too early to call that one, but probably moderate rains. It doesn't look like anything more than we're going to have this weekend. It looks like the wetter one, but we'll have to wait and see on that.
Temperature ranges over the next week going to stay fairly normal, or will we?
Yeah, they won't be too far from normal, above normal, as a matter of fact, today and tomorrow, just ahead of the good rains late tomorrow, and then a cool degree or two below normal Monday, Tuesday, back to normal, and then the cold front comes along later next week, and then we see some cooler temperatures. But even there, not bad temperatures in the mid-60s daytime, a mid-40s nighttime.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
My pleasure as well.
Thanks much. Pete Levitt is a meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report, and that happens on Thursday afternoons.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
That is today's edition of the Closing Market Report. Remember, if you'd like to listen again to the weather analysis, the future analysis, the cash grain markets, anything that you've heard on the radio station in terms of ag programming for the most part throughout the day today, you can pick it up off our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all kinds of things, including MP3 files you can download on demand. We can sign up for the podcast if you'd like to, and have that delivered directly to your computer. And you can sign up as well for our weekend newsletter. It's all at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. For Dave Dickey, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations, I bid you a good afternoon.